Hi, and welcome to the Provider Podcast by NHS Providers. My name's Adam Brimelow, and in this episode, we're focusing on the number one concern for trust leaders, workforce. We'll take a tour of the key findings from the NHS staff survey, which underline repeated warnings from the front line of how tough it's been in the face of relentless pressure, the burnout, the inequalities, staff engagement and morale, and what it all means for the quality of patient care. We'll also talk to NHS Providers Chief Executive Chris Hobson about the Ockenden Review, the context, the failings and the lessons that must be learned. You can join in the conversation by following us on Twitter and LinkedIn at NHS Providers with the hashtag The Provider Podcast, and keep up to date on future episodes by subscribing to the podcast. So let's start with the final Ockenden report, the culmination of a five-year review of maternity care at the Shrewsbury and Telford Hospital NHS Trust, covering almost two decades and 1,600 incidents involving mothers and their babies. The findings are shocking, highlighting failures that may have led to the deaths of more than 200 babies, nine mothers, and left other infants with life-changing injuries. They include a culture of bullying, anxiety, and fear of speaking out among staff, where mistakes weren't investigated and parents weren't listened to. Chris Hobson, this is a scandal and a tragedy with important lessons for the NHS, isn't it?
Yeah, I think I'm sure everybody in the NHS, like me, found reading the report really very, very difficult. It does show a set of really serious and wide-ranging and long-lasting kind of failures that were very, very difficult. And obviously, one's immediate thoughts go out to those who were impacted as a result of those failures. I mean, you know, no parent or prospective parent would want to hear some of the stories that were set out in the report. So yeah, I think it was really, really difficult. And it obviously does pose some really, really important questions for the NHS.
Well, one of the key lessons here, which is all too familiar, is developing the right culture, moving from blame to learning and listening. Why is that so important, and why is it so hard?
I think it's worrying, but right that you use the word familiar, in terms of there clearly have been a series of reports in terms of both Mid Staffordshire, but also Morecambe Bay, Gosport, and now this one, where it is clear, exactly as you say, that culture is a really important part of this. And so from my perspective, there is absolutely no doubt that in healthcare there is risk, but if we're to manage that risk successfully, it's incredibly important that we listen really carefully to patients, but also that the staff who are providing care have the ability to flag and speak up quickly and effectively if they think there are problems occurring. And I think there are a number of sort of potential common themes across those reports, but I do think that you know, the culture of listening to patients, and also the culture of allowing staff to speak up, or enabling staff to speak up, is really, really important. But we know that we're also kind of tackling some really kind of quite difficult issues here. So a good example would be, I personally found it interesting, if one is allowed to use a word like that in this context, that actually the practice that had been going on in terms of a real focus on reducing C-section rates had been something that was, for example, you know, praised and highlighted as something good by the Health Select Committee. And I also again found it interesting that before the report was released, both the Royal College of Midwives and the Royal College of Obstetricians and Gynaecologists and NHS England had recognised that some of the practice that had been going on was inappropriate. But at the time, as I said, it seemed like it was appropriate. And for me, that I think also kind of highlights the importance of the ability of clinicians to be able to think reflectively about their practice, compare it to clinicians in other institutions to identify whether they are doing the right thing, but also having a respect for the data. I think one of the concerning bits here is the fact that, you know, the mortality data should have acted as a warning bell, but appeared not to do so.
So clearly there are lessons for maternity services across the NHS, but also for regulators and for national bodies too, in terms of oversight and resourcing.
I think if you look at the report, I think it does provide a clear and comprehensive and well thought through plan to improve the quality of care and patient safety across maternity services nationally. And whilst the NHS has been making significant strides in improving outcomes over the last decade, there's so very clearly still much more to do. And I think, as the report rightly highlights, then delivering better outcomes is, as we've said, partly developing the right culture. But I think it's also about trusts having the necessary resources, capacity and time required to ensure that the recommendations in this report can be fully and properly implemented. One of the things that worries me is that trusts have told us they're already concerned that they won't be able to recruit sufficient staff to meet the standards outlined within the report. And again, the report has highlighted the need to have increased funding. And there is a funding boost announced last week of £127 million. But if you look at the kind of estimates that we were developing, which are actually referred to in Donna Rockenden's report, actually, we estimated that the number of staff needed, the cost of that would be in the region of somewhere between £200 to £350 million in recurrent annual funding. So this is an opportunity. A really, really important opportunity that we mustn't miss. But there are some very significant challenges to meet here if we are going to get those recommendations fully implemented.
Yeah, and we know that trusts are committed to taking the review recommendations forward to ensure high quality care for all mothers and babies. And on this, there's a concern, isn't there, once again, about disparities faced by Black, Asian and minority ethnic mothers and their children.
Absolutely, Anne. And I think one of the kind of themes that I think rightly and helpfully has come much more centre stage over the last couple of years, particularly driven by COVID-19 inequalities, is this sense of we've got to work much harder on ensuring that we get equality of outcome and we address those health inequalities. And, you know, there's a very good example here, which is that we know that there are stark disparities faced by Black and Asian minority ethnic mothers and their children who currently are showing a significantly increased risk of adverse outcomes. And I think it's dependent upon us as an NHS to work harder to ensure those outcomes are equalised across the population as a whole.
Chris Hobson, thank you. So let's look now at the NHS Staff Survey, a key barometer of workforce morale, which offers really important insights into where concerns lie, the fairness, openness and safety of the work environment, opportunities for progression and development and the quality of care. So there's always keen interest in the findings, but never more so than this time, given the pressures we've seen over the last couple of years, particularly with the pandemic, and the continuing concerns about staff and skill shortages. Nearly 650,000 staff responded to the survey, which was carried out from September to December last year, from 280 NHS organisations, including all 217 trusts. The findings are stark and disturbing. Let's pick through them now with Finn O'Dwyer-Cunliffe, who's NHS Providers Senior Policy Manager, focusing on workforce, and Sarah White, a policy advisor in the same team. Finn, if I could start with you, why does the staff survey matter so much?
Yeah, I think, Adam, it's long been held as probably the most reliable source of information on sort of staff experience and working conditions in the NHS, partly because, as you mentioned, nearly 650,000 people responded to the survey and the response rate has always been very high. But I suppose from a broader perspective, there's long been a good quality of evidence, both in the UK and internationally, associating the link between employee engagement and quality of care. I think in the NHS, more specifically, we've had recent studies in the last decade that have shown the clear link between high staff engagement scores and CQC, and positive CQC ratings, but also strong staff engagement scores and positive patient experience. So there is that clear link, and ultimately, to be fair, we don't need a whole deal of evidence to understand that, you know, happy staff and those who feel better about the job that they are doing are going to perform in a better way and produce high quality services.
So, Sarah, one of the key concerns around workforce is burnout and their health and well-being through what's been such a challenging period. What do the findings tell us here?
Yeah, I think the findings are quite confronting here and quite challenging, which is understandable, particularly given the last couple of years. But burnout and well-being of staff is something that has been a concern long before the pandemic came into play. So even though a really high proportion of staff report that their organisations take positive action on health and well-being, so we're pushing 60% on that marker, we're still having a really high amount of staff reporting that they're experiencing unrealistic time pressure in their job and that there aren't enough staff. That's a real facer, because if there's not enough staff, your workload gets higher, you're, you know, more exhausted, you're having to work more. It's just a really difficult one to navigate. So as much as we can look to improvements in personal well-being and supporting staff in their personal health, both physical and mental, it can only go so far when we're seeing these persistent workforce shortages that have just been a problem for such a long time and have been compounded over the last couple of years. And we've seen a big jump this year in the indicators that staff just feel there's not enough colleagues to get the work done. Makes sense, we are seeing such rising demand, but it's been a big step change in this year's results. So we've seen an 11% increase in staff saying there's just not enough people. So that is a real concern. And I think the only way to really sustainably protect health and well-being of staff is to make sure that we're not just filling those workforce gaps, but we're actually bringing in additional staff and ensuring that there's a pipeline to bring additional staff into the NHS so that we can, you know, reliably protect breaks and annual leave and offer more flexible working options for the people that we do have. And that will just really help retention as well, which is another really key concern. So it's a tricky one, but we do have some real opportunities at the minute with the Health and Care Bill and the work that HEE's been doing on updating its Framework 15. So it's planning for workforce drivers across health and social care. So, you know, it's a challenging picture, but I remain hopeful that we can make some really good inroads here. We just need the right kind of considered and honestly compassionate policies in place nationally to enable it.
Okay, so there's a really key sort of element of information in this survey, isn't there, about inequalities? And Finn, here again, the findings are worrying, particularly on race and also disabled staff.
That's right. Yeah, I think the main reason the findings are so concerning is that there just hasn't been improvement over the past 5 years. That's a bit of a broad statement, and there's been fluctuations in certain areas. But if you look at the key workforce race equality metrics that are included within the staff survey, such as the proportion of staff experiencing discrimination, the proportion of those incidents which are based on race, and the proportion of staff from ethnic minority backgrounds who feel they have equal opportunities for progression and career promotions, they're not good findings, and there's a lack of progress from last year and the year before. Set against the backdrop of, you would hope to think, and I think we do see it certainly with the member trusts, of improved awareness and understanding of structural racism in the NHS. So that is really disappointing, and it goes on to the impacts and the incidents of bullying and harassment as well, which are, whether from patients, members of the public or colleagues, those findings within the staff survey again have been quite consistent with the last few years, and worse for ethnic minority staff than white staff. And you mentioned disabled staff as well. I suppose the positive here is that there's been increased focus in recent years on collecting improved data for staff living with one or more sort of major health condition or illness. But that data itself, again, is showing that there's a differential experience. I think particularly concerning is the very low number of disabled staff who say they feel their work is valued or who feel they're contributing to decisions, whether that's around their disability and their access to work or more broadly around their work on the whole. So there's significant improvements to be made and a lot for us to face up to as the NHS as a whole when it comes to tackling racism or discrimination in other forms.
Yeah, and Sarah, we heard Finn talking a little earlier on about the importance of the staff survey indicating the quality of care for patients. What does it tell us this time round, Sarah?
Yeah, this is a really interesting marker, actually, and I think it benefits from a slightly more nuanced discussion than is often given to it in kind of national discourse. But it's interesting that we're still seeing really high levels of staff knowing what their responsibilities are within their role, and we're seeing really high levels of staff feeling trusted to do their job. So these are both like 90%. Really high. However, despite this, we've seen a decrease this year in staff happy with the standard of care that they can offer. So there's been a 6% decline in staff feeling happy with how they can look after patients. And I think it's interesting that correlates, that decline maps, you know, pretty strongly against the increase in staff saying there aren't enough colleagues. And it does come back to the point of just these huge additional workloads, huge increasing pressures and increasing demands. It makes it harder to give the attention to patients that staff want to. And I think this is the nuance that gets left out quite often. I think this really speaks to the standard to which our NHS staff hold themselves. And we know that they care about their job. And we see that in these results. And I think it's really worth remembering that. And it plays into the health and wellbeing conversation as well, because we've seen lots of staff side organizations making the point around moral injury, particularly across COVID, of staff being forced to make impossible choices and to carry impossibly huge workloads. It really has an effect not only on quality of care and patient experience, but on the staff. And I think that gets left out of this discussion quite often. It's a really hard one for staff to face. And, you know, our members, trust leaders, are doing everything they can to support staff in that. But it's a real challenge. And it just speaks to the demands that are on staff and the pressure that the service is under. And I think we just need to bear that in mind. We need to bear the effects on staff in mind when considering these aspects, really.
Yeah. And an issue that's bound to be of concern to staff is pay and recognition. Finn, what are we seeing in terms of the feedback on that?
The feedback is that a smaller percentage of staff are satisfied with their pay than at any point in the last few years, at least since 2018, that sort of 2017-18 period, where there was a similarly low proportion, under a third, who are satisfied with their level of pay. There are a few reasons for this, including quite a bit of discussion around whether pay levels are right in the last couple of years, particularly relating to the amount of sort of attention and applause ultimately that NHS staff and other key workers were given throughout the pandemic, when people really recognised that they were going above and beyond to protect us from COVID. And that, they feel, just hasn't translated into fairness or, you know, a level of pay that they're satisfied with for the most part. The parallel 2017-18 is interesting. That was the time when Agenda for Change staff, which is most basically non-medical staff in the NHS, received a three-year pay uplift, having negotiated that with the government. And particularly for lower paid staff, it actually gave quite strong increases in the later years and improved things on the pay satisfaction side, which is shown in the survey in those years following that deal. So it sort of points to a question of whether something similar is needed now. The other point I would make about it is that The findings are quite different depending on what type of job people are doing in the NHS. Medical and dental staff are significantly more satisfied with their pay, albeit there are still problems there, than other staff, particularly ambulance staff, registered nurses and midwives. And then, you know, those who are working in the lower bands, including nursing and healthcare assistants, who really are struggling, particularly against the cost of living crisis that we see at the moment.
Thanks, Finn. I'd just like to move on to this concept of staff engagement and morale. The survey has a kind of index, doesn't it, to reflect these issues. Sarah, what's it telling us about staff engagement and morale?
It just speaks to the fact that staff really are engaged and they really care about their jobs and what they're doing, which is brilliant. So, you know, as Finn says, we've got a really high rate of response to this staff survey, which not only is really helpful, but it's an indicator that staff are engaged, and that is good for a number of reasons. We've got results in the survey showing that staff still feel their role makes a difference. We've got, you know, above 80% of staff who enjoy working with their colleagues. And we've got really high proportions of staff who feel like their teams understand each other and understand each other's roles well, and really high levels of knowing what their responsibilities are and feeling trusted to do their job. So we're seeing a lot of kind of positive reflection on the way that staff work together and how engaged they are with the roles. But we are seeing drops in markers in terms of morale across the board and across all age groups. In fact, it's been an even drop across all age groups for the first time, which is really interesting. And I think it again speaks to the pressure that staff are under just across the board. They're really coming under the cosh. And as much as they're enjoying working together, they're obviously finding the environment within which they're working really difficult. So we've got these kind of 80%+ of enjoying working with colleagues. And yet we've had a 7.4% drop in staff who would recommend their organisation as a place to work, which, you know, we've seen that particular marker improve steadily since 2017. And this is the lowest it's been for 5 years. So I think that just speaks to the demands that have been placed on staff. And this kind of, you know, Finn was speaking about this lack of recognition and this perceived lack of tangible thanks, I suppose, for what it is that they have done. They have gone above and beyond. And yeah, we should bear in mind that this is a job and people should be remunerated fairly for it. And that's what we've been calling for in terms of the pay rounds this year. And I think that'll be really important. It's certainly something that could make a real tangible difference to a lot of staff who clearly really care about their work and want to do well in it.
And Finn, so this is really quite a gloomy set of readings when you look across the board, and really reflects the sorts of things that trust leaders have been telling us about over quite a long period. What needs to happen now?
Yeah, so it's good to have an opportunity to talk about some positive things, some opportunities to sort of address these results. And I think, as Sarah was talking about earlier, one of the issues that really is reflected is just the sheer weight of workforce gaps and the extent to which that lack of staffing resource is affecting not only what the NHS sort of can deliver, but also the extent to which staff are happy. So on that side, there is an opportunity on a couple of fronts for certainly leadership at the higher levels of the NHS, and particularly from government, to come up with a fully funded and costed workforce plan for the NHS, which is something we've been pushing for many years now, and something for which there's an opportunity to address in legislation being looked at right now if the government were to accept an amendment to the Health and Care Bill, which calls for a long-term needs assessment for the workforce, which we hope would eventually lead to the kind of sustained increases in staffing capacity that we need to see. And in the more immediate sort of future, recent trends show that there are opportunities to address staffing shortages, whether through domestic training. We've seen upticks in training interest in particularly nursing and allied health degrees in recent years. So we need to keep that consistent and continue to invest on that side. And at the same time, with the government's 50,000 nurses manifesto commitment, they say they're on track to meeting that commitment, and all signs point to it happening. So again, just sort of showing what the emphasis of a particular commitment can do. And there's greater opportunities to bring in more qualified staff from abroad. The final thing I'll say is, back on the sort of pay side, again, the government will very shortly be reviewing independent recommendations on pay levels for staff of all grades across the NHS. So there is an opportunity now, particularly looking at these survey findings, looking at the sort of weight of the challenges facing us, for the government to give a real meaningful rise to staff this year, possibly a multiple year commitment, and also really reckon with the impact of rising cost of living at the moment. All of these factors taken together would put us on the right path towards improved results in the future.
Thanks for that, Finn, and to you, Sarah, as well.
That's it. Two very tough topics for this edition, but so important for trusts, their staff, and of course for patients. My thanks again to Chris Hobson, to Finn O'Dwyer-Cunliffe, and Sarah White for their contributions. Remember, you can join in the conversation by following us on Twitter and LinkedIn at NHS Providers with the hashtag The Provider Podcast, and keep up to date on future episodes by subscribing to the podcast. Thank you.